This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. Appreciate you being here. We're all about your money. That's our five-day-a-week focus. We're here every day, weekday on radio up and down California, live online, streaming on investtalk.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast. You can listen to it anytime you want. It's handy. We try to make it handy. Now, each day we bring topics to the program that we think are worth your while. But ultimately, you drive the show. You are the ones who decide what we're going to talk about. Many of you have questions, 401k questions, IRA questions, retirement questions, insurance questions. You know, all those kinds of issues, how to manage a portfolio, when to buy, and the most common stock is a stock question. A question about should I buy, sell, or hold this stock? And I realize that's the most interesting question to most of you listeners, but it's not necessarily the most important. You have to know it. I'm not saying that. You really have to know what you're buying and selling and when and why, all that stuff. But I often talk about risk on this program because it's priority number one, managing the risk of a portfolio of stocks. And that means you have to know what you have in your portfolio, know how it reacts to different economic environments, different political environments. How does that portfolio of stocks react? Not just the one or the two, the overall. And unfortunately, it's an ongoing process. It's dynamic. It changes because the environment changes. Right? Think about the political environment worldwide, what's going on. That affects things, does it not? Makes people worry. Think about the economic environment that's going on in Europe. And is the political environment going to affect the economic environment more in Europe than it has in the past? And the answer would be yes. Think about the United States. What's the political environment in our United States and how does it affect stock market? We're in election year, right? Election year. The government, our Congress, our President, our House of Representatives, the Senate, they're not going to do anything. They're going to be a do-nothing group of people this year. Now, in some ways, that's good. We don't want them to do too much. but you know, that's a political environment that affects the stock market environment. That's all I'm suggesting. Then you think about the economic side. How about our economics going on here in the United States? The economic side is improving. You look at all the numbers, it's improving. Now, if the numbers have been improving for the last month, how come the stock market's falling? I mean, the last couple of days, not today, but the last couple of days it was up, but for most of the month of, all the month of August is down. For part of the month of July, it's down. Last, 3 weeks? Kind of on the downside. Why? When the economic numbers are looking better. So, see, it's managing the whole portfolio of things, you know, what's going on, not just individual stocks. Some people have a higher tolerance for risk. Some people have a lower tolerance for risk. Do you know what your tolerance is? And you can see what it is. What is your combination of factors that come into play when you want to measure risk and whether the true risk in your portfolio is appropriate for you? Now, we have a new tool. We have a new tool for you at your disposal to help you understand your risk tolerance. Remember, that's just what we've been focused on. What is your risk number from 0 to 100? Where do you fall? 100 being the high risk, a super, super high, 0 being no risk. Where do you fall in that? And you can use it for free at investtalk.com. It's a free personal risk analysis. It's called Riskalyze. It helps you capture your risk tolerance and see if your portfolio fits you. So first you ask a very simple set of questions about how much risk you feel comfortable with. And it's a very simple question. It's nothing personal. It's not asking. It's just about what you, if you got this kind of, if you could get this kind of gain in the next month, 6 months, and you could lose this much in losses, 10% loss or 20% gain. Would you take the risk for that in the next 6 months? Yes or no? Those series of questions like that, not very many, and it can score your personal risk tolerance. Then the beauty part is we can put in your portfolio and see what the score risk level of your portfolio is. And you can say, well, my risk tolerance is 72, but my portfolio is 50. So I can tolerate more risk if I want to, because it's driven by you and how you answer the questions, not by somebody third party trying to figure out, you know, what kind of person you are. You know, I do that myself when I meet with people, but this gives you your score based on what you think. I really like it. It's really neat. You can give it a try. It's free. It's on our InvestTalk.com's website. It's called Riskalyze. It's right there. InvestTalk.com. Two T's. InvestTalk.com. Now, do you feel your current retirement portfolio is putting too much of your money at risk? Maybe the opposite is true. Maybe you're all in cash and you're not getting anything. Let's talk about it. Our listener line is always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can get through right now. 888-99-CHART is our number. No matter what your money question is, we'll answer it. So let's go to our 24-hour listener line.
Steve and Justin, this is Bobby from Atlanta, Georgia. What do you guys think of Transocean? The ticker symbol is RIG. I do own it since a long time, but since the recent drop, shall I buy some more or shall I buy rather ESV, Ensco Place? E as an Echo, S as a Sam, V as a Victor. Thanks. Bye.
I won't compare one stock to another because it's too difficult to do it on the air, but I'll take a look at RIG. RIG, R-I-G, is Transocean. And the reason why I want to take that one look is we own that stock in our managed accounts. And we bought it fairly low, and it has fallen a little bit lower than what we bought it. We bought it in the low 40s, and it's now 39. So it's kind of trying to find a bottom around $40 a share. I mean, it's really where it wants to stop going down. And it went down as low as a little bit above 38 four days ago and bounced. Now, why do we like it? One of the main reasons we like it, it's one of the largest offshore driller, contract driller, oil and gas wells worldwide. And it pays a 7.7% dividend, and it can easily handle paying that dividend. It's going to make $4.52 this year. And it's a $39 stock. The problem, why this is dipping, is they're estimating $3.34 next year. They lowered next year's estimates, and then, boom, it took it down. So at $3, and the PE is 8. The five-year range of the PE is 5 to 39. So at $3.39, and it's a $39 stock, and they're paying 7%, they can easily pay that 7%, even with $3.39. Cash flow is more than twice that, $7.17. So extremely healthy company with not a lot of debt. And the mutual funds are actually been steady. They actually gone up from a year ago. So I'm okay. I like the stock a lot. Should you buy more here? Well, if they have a market correction, it might go lower. But I'm telling you, it's an awful inexpensive stock now. I think it's one you want to have in your portfolio. I mean, just the dividend alone is pretty impressive. I doubt they have never cut the dividend in the last, what, 3-4 years. So I don't know how far back. I don't think they will cut it at all. But that would, you know, that mess up all the, this is not going to happen. And earnings are pretty strong. I like it. The stock chart is weak. That I don't like. So I probably wouldn't buy more here. I'd like to wait to see if it come back, give you some strength before I put more on or buy more. But we own it in our managed accounts right now. Not all of them, but a lot of them. What you need to know about investing is building products. That's one of our talking points today. Also, I want to talk about oil prices. Have you been paying attention to them? I want to talk about it. Mortgage borrowers credit scores slide this year. Do you have an idea what's going on with credit scores? Because the banks have been very, very tight. And there might be some good news out there about that. Payday lenders, you know those payday loan companies? Their days, payday lenders, paydays, their days are numbered. I'll talk about that. And when should you start taking Social Security? Everybody has a different opinion, and everybody gives you all this math, and you know, this is where you can make more money if you wait, or this is how much and all that stuff. Well, I got some basic decision-making criteria that I want to share with you. Just basic stuff, stuff you don't have to like agonize over. Simple stuff. Okay? We're going to talk about those things. But, of course, what's on your mind is always, always important. The Dow was down 9 today. The Nasdaq was down 12. The S&P down 3. We had two up days, and today is a down day. Before that, if you look at the S&P 500, which is a broad indicator, the stock market peaked recently on what day is that? Let's get that day. That day was 7/24. On July 24th, the stock market peaked. What did it peak at? It closed that day at 1987. What is it today? 1933. So it's down 54 points or so. But the real market weakness is in the Russell 2000. That one peaked on July 3rd, almost a whole month prior to the S&P 500. And that peak, just so you know, was a close of 1208. Today it's 1133. So that's been a much bigger drop than the S&P 500. And if you go to the Dow, I mean, we want to be fair. The Dow peaked, there's that peak, and that's July 16th, and it closed that day at 17,138, and today it's 16,300, about, 700 points-ish, 650, 700 points-ish down from the top. And so you can see the market really started to weaken for the most of the month of July for most of the market. And then the S&P, the broad 500 companies, the biggest 500 companies, really started to weaken later in July. And then you have a couple days bounce. So the question is this the correction? It was, 7-8% in the Russell 2000, but only 3%, 3.5%, 4% in the S&P 500. No one in the industry would call that a correction, just so you know. It's too small. A normal correction is 10% for the S&P 500. We haven't had one of those since, again, in summer of 2011. This is Invest Talk. What do you want to talk about? What are the sectors you should be following? Have you been watching gold this year? Gold is one of our highest positions and have been for all this year. What do you think is going on with the gold market? And is the run in gold over? You want to talk about that? Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
As InvestTalk continues, we remind you of some of the resources available to our InvestTalk insiders. You can pick and choose from our growing list of InvestTalk webinars. Become an insider. Sign up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Let's go talk to Rob in Poway. How you doing, Rob?
It's Rob. Hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a stock, KMP, that was recently Kinder Morgan Energy Partners. It was bought out by Mr. Kinder, and I don't know what's going to happen now. Are they going to tell me that I have to sell my stocks, or I have to sell my stocks and buy his new stock? I understand KMP is going from an MLP into, he's been absorbed into Mr. Kinder Morgan's into Kinder's company, new company.
I don't know what's
happening now. Are they going to contact me for my shares, or do I sell them in the market first and then buy the new company? Or what happens when a company is bought out by another company, specifically in this case?
Okay.
KMP.
Okay, so KMP is Kinder Morgan Energy Limited Partnership, and they're buying all the master limited partnerships and of Kinder Morgan and putting them under one roof is what they're doing. And what they will do, you don't have to do anything, by the way, because it will just happen. You'll be issued new shares. Your old shares will disappear. When one company A buys company B, sometimes it's bought with all shares. So 2.6 shares for every one share or whatever the agreement was. I don't know what it was in Kinder Morgan. Or it could be cash. They could say, well, we're just going to buy you out and give you cash. You have to look at the rules. You don't have to do anything. Personally, I'd probably sell the stock. Unfortunately, it got up close to 100. Now it's back down to 92. But it was 80 2 days ago. So I'd probably take my profits and run. Our PM newsletter is available for you at InvestTalk.com. Bring your questions to me, 888-99-CHART.
just in case you haven't heard, we want to hear more from our podcast subscribers. You're more than welcome to call when our program is being produced and get involved in the conversation about your money. Make it personal. Talk to Steve or Justin at 888-99-CHART between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Help shape the topics. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. InvestTalk continues on this Tuesday. What you need to know about investing in building products. That's our talking point. But what's yours? Check in now with Steve at 888-99-CHART.
You know, one of the things I get a lot of one of the topics I get a lot of questions on is investing in building and building industry, housing, those kinds of things. And it's a little more complicated than just saying, well, I'm just better about investing in the building industry. Because there's different parts of the industry, like many industries, and different parts work differently. You can't just say, I'm going to invest in the housing market. I'm going to invest in builders. I'm going to invest in lumber yards. I'm going to invest in companies that are in the remodeling industry. It doesn't work, you know, it doesn't work that way. It's not that simple. Like everything, it's not that simple. For instance, residential. From 2006 to 2014, the residential construction is down 45% from 2006 to 2014. But the same period for non-residential, it's up 16% commercial buildings. See, as that's obviously a different type of investment. This year, residential is up 7.1 and commercial is down 4.6. So you can't just say, well, I'm just going to do commercial or residential. It's not that easy. And there's different types of products. And I just don't want people to think, well, the housing market probably going to start improving because interest rates are going to stay low and I want to be in the builder industry. Well, if interest rates are real low and they start to move up, that hurts private builders. I mean, builders of single family homes. Because that the lending is going to be more costly. At the same time, one of my topics here is going to be mortgage borrowers credit scores, which are the lenders have lowered recently. So you kind of, there's a lot of moving parts. And by the way, that's true of almost every industry we talk about. There's a lot of different moving parts. So what part of the building industry do you want to be in? And you focus on that. And the building industry, you could say, well, it will follow maybe the growth and shrinkage of GDP, gross domestic product, of the country. That's true and that's false. It's not always true. If the GDP is shrinking, the industry has already taken a huge hit. If the GDP is growing, building industry is already, almost every one of those stocks already factored that in. And like everything investing, you have to look forward. You have to be ahead of the game, a step ahead. That's another reason why it makes it so difficult to invest. Because almost every sector, you have to look forward. I'll give you another example. Last year, one of the worst sector was gold. This year, one of the best performing sectors is gold. And what happened to the GDP over that time? See, what drives gold? Fear drives gold. Different things drive gold. So you have to understand what drives the value of different assets in different economic and political environments. And just think about the door that widens, the door of information. You walk in a room and there's all this information you have to know. And I just open up another door. And off that room, there's a million other doors with more information. And it's ongoing all the time. And by the way, that's why I like it. I mean, because you're always learning, always more to learn. Something new is happening all the time. It's not a boring profession. It's not. I didn't say it was the easy profession, but it's not boring. It's difficult. Our podcast listeners from all over the world, download the program. If you'd like to join them, you can do that. Subscribe for free at iTunes. If you have a question for us, you can always ask at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I'm Sean from Seattle, Washington. I listen to you guys on podcasts. I currently am receiving a defined pension plan right now. My company also does offer a Roth. My company does also offer a 401k plan. I'm just trying to figure out if I should invest in the 401k plan that does not have a match, or if maybe a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA would be a little better as far as the tax repercussions, as well as the flexibility of having a lot of different options to choose from. Thank you, and thanks again.
Well, that's a pretty wide open question. Congratulations on working for a company that gives you a defined benefits plan. I mean, that's not too common. And being in Seattle, maybe that's Boeing. I'm not sure. Anyways, in an environment where 401k is offered, but the company does not match, of course they wouldn't, because they're giving you a retirement plan. But where they're not matching a 401k, and you are able to put money away tax-free, I would opt for the IRA, even though you could put less in there. You can always do a combination of IRA and 401k, depending on your salary and the rules and regs. And you sound fairly young. I like young people or younger people to use Roths. I like a Roth 401k. Now, we've done the math many times, and it's not necessarily a benefit, Roth over a regular IRA necessarily, other than it gives you more freedom when retirement comes around. Because at age 70 and a half, if you don't need the money and you have a regular IRA, a regular 401k, you have to start taking it out. The government makes you. If you have a Roth, you don't ever have to take it out. And I do like the different tax issues. I like all the money growing tax-free in a Roth versus a regular IRA, you get taxed. But the actual math at the very end of the equation, it's very difficult to come up with because of what tax bracket you are and all of this. It's difficult. So you kind of have to look at you individually. But I do like the freedom of choices in an IRA as opposed to a 401k where they usually limit you. You can see the latest dates and locations for my individual retirement views right there on InvestTalk.com. I'm in Northern California this month. Still have some time. I'll be in San Jose on the 21st, everybody, if you want to meet with me. Check the dates at Invest Talk.
You're listening to Invest Talk, and we're glad you're here. Give us a call and check in. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve with your question or comment right now on Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Have you seen oil prices? They're down to $97.37 a barrel. And finally, they're falling. Now remember, this is in August. This is not time, the summertime, oil prices don't fall. But they've been hovering over $100 a price all year long. And we're finally seeing some weakness. Why? Well, there's a cut in the forecast for global demand. And the Energy Department said the U.S. is producing more and more oil. We're going to produce 8.5 million barrels a day over the year of 2014, this year. That's going to be our average, 8.5 million barrels a day for 2014. Next year, 9.3 million. Okay, just to give you an idea, we haven't produced that much oil since 1972. We haven't produced 8.5 million barrels of oil for 30 years. But when we go to 9.3 million, it's going to, for all of 2015, all that oil we're producing is pressuring downward on world oil prices. Remember, oil trades around the world at a price, and our oil is at $97.37 a barrel. Brent, the price in Europe, is $103.02. But it's all putting pressure downward. There's plenty of supply. Think about the environment politically we're in worldwide. What's going on in the Middle East? What's going on in Russia and Ukraine and there's tension, and normally that would spike oil prices. But we got a worldwide glut. We have plenty of oil. So finally it's pushing oil prices down, and hopefully we'll get into the low 90s or the high 80s. Why I say hopefully, because in January when I wrote to my clients, I said, I think sometime this year oil will get down to low 90s or high 80s. I would like to be right. So far, I'm totally wrong. It's been hovering around 100. But We do have a glut. We don't need it. I think these prices are higher than they should be. And probably because of the tension worldwide, or else they wouldn't be this high. But who knows? So that's what's going on in the oil industry. And therefore, car prices, gasoline prices should ease. They've been going down recently in August, and that's unusual. Usually they're peaking in August. They peaked in, what, June or July they peaked. Now they've come down. Kind of interesting. Kind of an interesting dynamic going there. Now, because of the oil glut, got to be careful where you invest your money. Do you put it in the oil industry when oil prices might be coming down? We have a world glut. Again, just like the building industry, it depends on what sector and what moves. Now let's get back to the phone. I'm ready to answer any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART, how you get through. You can do it right now.
Hi, this is Craig in Concord, and I listen to you on AM 1220, so then you could answer this afternoon or tomorrow. If I'm investing in a bond fund and I really only care about income, why do I care if net asset value of that bond fund goes down if interest rates go up and I get higher interest? Could you address that? Does a bond bubble really concern an income investor if he's just looking for the yield income? Thank you.
Yes. And this is why. I understand you're just looking for the yield because it's paying, 3.5% or 4.2%. Whatever that bond fund is paying, you get that money, and that's all you're concerned. You're concerned about that money. But let's say you're getting 3%, and the net asset value of that bond fund is $20 a share, and you're getting 3% this year. Okay, but next year, interest rates are going to rise, and you're going to get 4%. So that's what your main concern is, get yield, and interest rates will rise. The problem with that is if the bond fund is selling at $20 a share at 3%, and interest rates go to 4%, that $20 per share net asset value will go down. Okay, and it could go down 5%. I don't know. I haven't done the math. There's actual math to do this. It could go down more than the increase in yield that you're getting. So your net asset value is still, as it goes down, your worth is going up. Now, if you actually held the bonds themselves, and by the way, the net, if interest rates keep going up over the next umpteen years, your net asset value will keep falling. But if you actually buy the bonds themselves and hold the bond to maturity, the bond values will go down, but your bonds, if physical bonds go back to the par price, what they were sold at, $100 when they sold, they'll go back to $100 when they mature, you collect the interest in between. Now, in between, interest rates could rise and drive that bond price downward, but it will eventually, as it matures, go back to par. So if you actually buy the bonds, you'll get your money back, 100%. If you buy a bond fund and interest rates go down for the next 5 years or up then next 5 years or 10 years or whatever direction it is, you may get more or less than your money back. Does that make sense to everybody? So it makes a difference. It does make a difference. And if you don't understand that, email me at investtalk.com, and I'll explain it more in writing. It might be easier to explain it right. It's just difficult to do it. It's easy to show it. It show examples on a piece of paper, and people, it's much easier that way. But can't do that. Can't do that over the radio. Now, if you like a quick rundown of managing bonds, we have one of those info sheets on the topic of bonds. It's yours for free. If you're an Invest Talk Insider, and to become an Invest Talk Insider, it doesn't cost anything. You just go to investtalk.com to sign up. The only thing you're going to be required to give is your email. I don't sell emails to anybody else. I use them, but I don't. Yeah, that's it. Time for Invest Talk 101. Investor's enemy number one, inflation. If your investment earns 7% after taxes, but if the rate of inflation is 4%, what is your real return? It's 3%. Easy. Your buying power only went up 3% because 4% of the inflation rate, 4% got eaten up of the 7% return. Think about movie tickets or going out to a restaurant. Prices go up. That's inflation. So the same, if you make the same amount of money, you're buying less for it. So as an investor, You need to understand how inflation can mess your bottom line, your net return, mess it up. Now, just how the rate of inflation influences the value of your portfolio and what can you do to protect it against inflation? There's things you can do. There's financial writer Josh Keenan. He offers three inflation tips. Number one, avoid high concentration of long-term bonds in your portfolio. Why? Long-term bonds go down most in inflation. And if you're stuck in a long-term bond paying 3%, inflation picks up in the future, you're going to lose money. Number two, own investments that can increase cash flows, like dividend-paying stocks. But then again, if you're dividend-paying stocks, you're taking the risk of the value of the stock, right? It's going to be pretty high. Inflation tip number three, own commodities that move independently from currencies. You understand that? That's nothing but diversification. That's a diversification method, okay? And diversification is very smart, especially commodities. If you're in an inflationary environment, commodities go up faster. Now, commodities have been coming down because there's been a glut of commodity production out there over the last few years. But that cycle will change. It always does. That's InvestTalk 101. If you have a question on this topic or any other money matter, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART or make a personal note that will come directly to me. You can send me an email. Just click on the Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
Take a look at Steve's info sheet called Managing a Bond Portfolio. That can be tricky business these days. This easy-to-follow document is available to all InvestTalk insiders. All you do is sign up to be an InvestTalk insider now on InvestTalk.com. It's free.
Hi, Diego from Aventura, Florida. What do you think about GAB, Gabelli Equity Trust? Thanks.
It's Gabelli Equity Trust, GAB, headquarters out of New York. It's a closed-in fund. Now, make sure you understand what the difference between open-in and closed-in. That invests in equity securities for long-term growth and capital and income. Okay, it's going to form a spinoff, a closed-in investment company named the Gabelli Global Healthcare and Wellness Trust, but that's neither here nor there. But it's a closed-end fund, meaning there's a finite number of shares, so the value of the assets can be higher, valued higher or lower than the actual value in the trust because there's a finite number of shares. If there's a demand for the shares because people want it, they can drive the price higher than the net asset value of what's inside the trust. An open-end fund always trades at the net asset value of the products inside. Now, the reason why you're looking at it is probably because of that 8.1 dividend yield. That's probably why you're looking at it. And I can't tell you if it's secure. My gut feeling tells me it's not. Why do I say that? Well, because 8.1% in this environment is very, very high. And it is investing in equity securities for long-term growth and capital and income. So the average S&P 500 dividend yield is like 3%. How are they getting 8.1? Well, they can do it. I'm not saying they can't, but they have to take a lot more risk to do it. And so now I have to find out what the heck are they investing in. You need to go inside it, find out what they're investing in to get that return. How are they getting it? And I can't see that from what I'm looking at. Now, from a stock chart, this is probably a good place to buy it, $7.37. It has a lot of support at around 720. It bounced right off of that number or so, right around 710 to 720. It bounced up. It's now 737. It's going to have a lot of resistance, just around $8. And that's where it's been trading for months and months and months. Last year, it did get as low as around 660. But that dividend, if that's doable, it's going to hold the price up. Everybody loves that 8.1% dividend. But again, is it sustainable? Got to look inside to see what they're holding. How do they do it? How do they achieve it? Let's go to Vic in San Jose. How you doing, Vic?
Steve, thank you for taking my call.
I
have a question about this KMM. It's I guess it's a multi-level marketing.
Yeah, a Deutsche multi-marketing income fund.
Right, right. They just changed their name recently, and I was wondering, should I worry about that?
No, not really. Most of the time when they're a closed-end or opened-end fund, and this is a closed-end fund that's investing in fixed income securities of U.S. and foreign insurers, U.S. and foreign issuers for current income. So it's looking for income. It's a dividend yield of 7.2, similar to the this is why you buy for the yield. And it, most of the time when they change the names of these things, Vic, it's to give a better, a more descriptive name of what they do. Because it's kind of, it's required by the SEC to be somewhat descriptive of what they actually do with the name. And they, many times they may have gotten in trouble from the SEC because their old name wasn't descriptive enough, or it was too vague, or whatever. That's what they do. Don't think of the name change as something wrong. Not necessarily. They could be, you know, lining up all their products into the same kind of name. You just don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes they'll change the name to get away from their old name because they had bad performance. I've seen them do that too.
What do you think about this and this particular one?
Well, it doesn't tell us a lot. They invest in foreign and U.S. issues for that dividend, for current income. So that's what they're keying on. So it doesn't tell me when I'm looking at it, it doesn't tell me what they're invested in. I don't see that from this description. All these closed-end funds takes a little bit of work to find out what's inside them. So if you want, if you send me an email, Vic, I can do some research. I just can't do it quickly on the radio. And I can tell you what I can tell you what they're in. That would be helpful.
Honestly.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Vic. I appreciate it. 888-99-CHART. Payday lenders' days are numbered. Why? Consumer Protection Agency is working on a set of rules they're going to impose on these payday lenders on a nationwide basis. And that's in addition to the states who are already cracking down on these payday loans. Now, I think... You should never, ever get a payday loan, okay? I don't like them. I don't think it's a smart – I think it's a very bad idea. But on the other hand, some people need them, obviously. And I don't know if we should squeeze them out completely. I don't know if that's a smart thing to do because you're going to hurt some of the poorest people who need them. At the same time, you probably need those nationwide standards. For instance – 4 out of 5 payday loans are like 7-day or 14-day loans. 4 out of 5 roll over. They don't pay them off. So that tells you that these people can't afford the loans in the first place. And 1 out of 5 loans ends up costing more than the loan. What is the average loan size of these payday loans? $430. So if a person gets a payday loan, they don't have access to credit probably. And they're paying extremely high rates for this credit. Now, that part I don't like. On the other hand, one of the reasons these people don't have access to credit because they're poor credit risks. So that's why they have to charge so much. Okay, now, don't get me wrong. I know there's a plenty of gouging going out there that we have to, you know, prevent or try to reduce or somehow get rid of that. I'm not against national standards. But it seems like the same attack on tobacco companies because you don't like it. You don't like tobacco companies, you don't like payday loans, and you can't necessarily, there's not an illegal business. So what do? You sue them, you put restrictions on them, you do all these things because it's an easy target. I don't like that part. I like a little bit more honesty in my dealings. This is Invest Talk. Our number is 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
This is Invest Talk, 1 hour of conversation about your money. Who needs an estate plan? What documents are involved? Do I need a lawyer? What's a durable power of attorney? Talk to Steve about it as we move into the final segment of this day. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now.
Let's see if we can answer another question. This one came from Roger in Santa Clara. 888-99-CHART is how you can reach us 24 hours a day.
Yes, I have a question regarding working with a financial planner. The financial planner that I've talked to a couple of times does not charge and, in fact, doesn't even have a requirement of any sort for future business, but works under the assumption that if he makes a good impression, you'll do business with him in the future. So my question is how do I know my financial planner who could manage my retirement account is a good one? In other words, do I ask questions around how he invests, that kind of thing? Anyway, I hope to get the answer on the air. Thanks.
Okay, first of all, let's think about what you're hiring. A financial planner is not an investment person. He's not a registered investment advisor, which is what I am. He's not a broker. He's a financial planner. And it's very common for them not to charge anything for their consultations. When how they make money is commissions off the products that they sell. Now, don't get me wrong, they will tell you buy this mutual fund or buy this insurance product or whatever, and they get commissions from those. Okay, and that's how they make the money, is the commissions. I'd rather see you go to a financial planner who charges and doesn't make any commissions. Because think about what he's going to do. He's going to want to put you in those things that give him a good commissions, right? I mean, his interests are not necessarily aligned with your interests. Not that there's a lot of financial planners are very good out there. But just try to remember, they're not investment advisors. They don't manage money for a living. They manage the financial plan of your life. You know, you should be saving this much money. You should buy this kind of insurance. You should put these kinds of this much money in investment products. These are the kind of returns you should be looking for. This is the kind of mortgage you should have, financial planning of your life. But as far as managing the investment, see, they'll offer mutual funds or annuities, and then the people who run those mutual funds and annuities manage the money. You understand? So it's not a bad thing that he's not charging. It's just always understand how people get paid, because he's going to get paid. I will talk to people and answer every question out there for nothing forever. Most ethical people will. They also most ethical people, all ethical people will tell you how they get paid. I get a percentage of the assets under management. That's how I get paid. No other way, no other anything else. And a financial planner, some of them get nothing, but they charge you by the hour for giving you advice, coming up with a financial plan. But the vast majority make commissions on the products they sell you. Annuities, insurance, mutual funds, they get commissions. Okay, so just understand how that works. Doesn't mean he's bad or good. It just is how he gets paid. I always like to know how people get paid, because everybody needs to get paid. Everybody. You get advice, you should be willing to pay for it eventually. I mean, that's the deal. If you can get free advice forever, great for you. I do it. I don't have a problem with it for myself. I don't. Now, Social Security. When do you take it? There's three basic questions here. Okay? First, when should you take Social Security? Really, the only thing that matters, really, when to start taking Social Security is when you need it. If you don't need it, you wait till you're 70. If you need it when you're 62, then you take it. And it's really deciding about the quality of life you're having. Really, that's the decision. I need to take it early because I need the money. If I don't need the money, don't take it, because it will grow until you're 70. For instance, if you took an average person took it at 62, the average amount is $750 a month. If you wait till 65, it's $933. If you wait till 70, it's $1,320. Now, that's the average person, average Social Security payout. So are you average? If you are, then you can see how much money you make if you keep waiting. And it's a guarantee. Now, if you're sickly and you're going to die young, you take it as soon as you can. If you need it, then you take it. Those are the kind of questions you ask. You can do all that fancy math and everything, but it's not that complex. Before we close for the day, I invite you to read my market commentary, Faltering Confidence. Political unrest around the world is eating at investors' confidence, not only here in the U.S., but also in Europe. What can that mean for you? It's there for you on InvestTalk.com. Thanks for listening today, everybody. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of everybody, Trust and Fly included, at KPP Financial, we'll hope to hear you and listen again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.